Your Eminency, Excellencies, brothers and sisters, today we will talk about our responsibility for the mission of the Church. Mission is not just one of the activities of the Church. It is its essence. The Church is mission. The goal of the mission and the purpose of the Church's existence is the transformation, Christification of the world. Mission is not to be confused with proselytism, the mere effort to increase the number of church members. Unfortunately, some local churches have paid or will pay for a superficial mission. They have many baptized, but few real Christians. Let us remember Jesus' warning words about the seed that came up quickly, but also perished soon because it did not take root. Evangelization is the ongoing process of incarnation of the gospel, the word of God, into a living culture, into the way people live and think. Evangelization is about inculturation. Evangelization without inculturation is merely superficial indoctrination. Some local churches in traditional Catholic countries have fallen victim to an automatic over-reliance on tradition. They have underestimated catechesis and the permanent education of the faithful. Believers without a solid religious education have no resistance to proselytism by fundamentalist sects. Where churches neglect honest dialogue with contemporary culture, it leads to the exculturation of faith, exculturation, and thus to the secularization of society. Those who only look back on the past cannot be leaven and salt. Instead, they become pillars of salt, like wife of Lot. Tradition comes alive in the art of creatively transmitting the message entrusted to us. We must transmit it in a new translation, into a living, intelligible language. To be faithful to tradition is not to be resistant to change. The essence of tradition is a permanent recontextualization, is a living river. If we are to remain faithful to the content in times of changing cultural context, we must have the courage to change the forms and the ways of expressing it. A healthy, authentic, responsible reformation, a change of form, must always serve a better, more profound expression of the content, the core. Some Christians are afraid of the changes that the process of sinner renewal will bring because they fear that Christianity may lose its identity. On the contrary, however, the renewal process is a challenge to discover the identity of Christianity in a new and more profound way. The identity of Christianity is the living, risen Christ. The life of the Church is continuation of the mystery of the Incarnation, the Paschal mystery of death and resurrection, and the event of Pentecost. The Christ who is present in the Church and whose presence is to grow in the history of the world cannot be bound into a few definitions. The key word of the Second Vatican Council was dialogue. The Council brought about a bold change in the Church's pastoral strategy. We will no longer emphasize only what separates us from others, but seek above all what unites us. It also means a change in understanding of the mission. Mission sees it to be a one-way street. It took the form of dialogue, which involves listening to others, respecting them, and seeking to understand them. Missionaries must shed the attitude of colonial superiority toward those to whom they are sent and toward their culture. This applies not only to Western missionaries in former colonies, but also to the relationship of Christians to contemporary modern and postmodern culture in the West. Evangelization and new evangelization must not be understood as reconquista. They must be free from nostalgia and desire to regain lost power positions. If the new evangelization of Europe is to be generally new, it must shed the old dreams of medieval Christianitas as imagined by the 19th century Romanticism. The Church in the Middle Ages fulfilled many social tasks that other institutions gradually took over. This freed us space and time for the Church to fulfill her proper and irreplaceable mission. Our goal is not a large and more powerful Church, but a more intense presence of Christ in the human family and a new form of Church as a more humble and thus more effective mediator of His presence. Synodality marks a further step in this direction. We must embark on a shared journey, synodos, with others, striving for universal fraternity, as we read in the encyclical Fratelli Tutti. On the way to his final goal, however, we need humility and sobriety to avoid turning it into a dangerous political ideology or a ridiculous social utopia. The universal brotherhood of all men and women, as well as the perfect unity of the Church and the fullness of her Catholicity, her universality, is the eschatological goal. To confuse the Church within history, within the world, with the eschatological Church of the saints in heaven, Ecclesia Triumphans, would be the heresy of triumphalism. We are not at a goal. We are not a perfect society. We are on the journey. We are a community of pilgrims, communio viatorum. The awareness of our distance from the goal, which is only at an unknown moment of the end of the history, must not lead us to resignation, but to patience and perseverance. On this journey, the light of Mount Tabor is exchanged with the darkness of Gethsemane. No state of the Church, or human society, or scientific, philosophical, and theological knowledge can be considered final and perfect. At no point on the journey can we make three tens and stop in our tracks. But a synodal Church, the Church on the way, also wants to offer oasis of rest and moment of celebration. It wants to be a welcoming, listening church, a place of hospitality. Moreover, it should also be a school of faith and wisdom. Christian communities should resemble the first universities in the Middle Ages. The first universities were not fabric for diploma. They were communities of learning and prayer, where truths were forced in free debate, and where the principle contemplata alis tradere applied. You can transmit to others what has matured in your contemplation. In today's world, the church cannot endure unless it offers schools of prayer, schools of personal relationship with God, and places of contemplation. It is valuable and essential when parishes and other Christian communities and institutions develop various social activities and thus participate in the life of civil society. It is suitable when Christians are not only involved within the framework of the ecclesiastical institutions, not creating a parallel society or Christian ghettos, but actively participating in the life of civil society. But all the social activities of Christians, whether they take place within our within or outside ecclesiastical institutions, can only be of real benefit to society if they come from the core, if they are inspired and constantly animated by that which is irreplaceable, the spirit of Christian love. Christian love is the unity of the relationship with God and the relationship with our neighbors. Solidarity with the people of our time, with their joy and hope, their anguish and pain, which the Church so gloriously promised at the Second Vatican Council, is a demanding task, and Christians can only live up to this commitment if they draw strength from adoration, from profound communion with God. The Church cannot turn away from the noisy world of constant change, but equally, the Church cannot stand in it without places of silence and spiritual refreshment. The network of local parishes will need to be supplemented by centers of spiritual life, where people learn contemplative prayer and personal spiritual life. These centers should also provide space for exchanging experiences and a common search for answers to pressing questions. What a faithful, as well as spiritual seekers outside the Church, call for most today is spiritual accompaniment. We can involve many lay people, men and women, women, in this ministry, if they have a background in theology and counseling, and above all, the necessary charism and experience. In the future pastoral ministry, we will need men and women who, according to Eastern Christianity's tradition, are called starets, old person. This word is similar to the term presbyter, which Greek of the New Testament used to designate the bearer of priestly ministry. A presbyter or presbytera, we find the term in the feminine on some early Christian mosaics, need not to be old, but mature. We need schools of Christian maturity. Maturity is proven by not simply caring about ourselves and our interests, but by accepting responsibility for others. I have other sheep, Jesus said. Who are these people beyond the visible boundaries of the churches. In much of the world, there is a growing number who, when asked what religion they subscribe to, answer that they subscribe to none. The sociology calls them nonness. Yet, it would be wrong to regard them as godless, as non-believers, or as atheists. Many among them have not been reached by the Christian message in a sufficiently intelligible and credible form to accept it honestly, or have been disappointed or traumatized by their experience of the church. When we read the message of the angels at the empty tomb at Easter, "Go to Galilee, there you will see him," I wonder where today's Galilee is, where we can encounter the living Christ, even in a way we don't expect. Perhaps it is that still little explored, growing continent of those nonness. Jesus said that a good shepherd must sometimes leave the 99 sheep of his flock and seek the one lost. Pope Francis added that many shepherds today must leave the one remaining sheep and seek the 99 lost ones. As parish priests, we must also be able to think beyond the horizon of parishes, especially parishes in their present form. In many countries, parish networks are being torn apart because of a lack of priests. Even in countries they have recently exported priests worldwide, seminaries are being too empty out. Some traditionalist seminaries may be filled with many zealous candidates for the priesthood, but it is questionable how many of them will be helpful in the life of today's parishes. We don't need priests as museum guardians or museum artifacts. The recent coronavirus pandemic was a huge spiritual and pastoral experience. Empty, closed churches were a prophetic warning sign. There are many empty and closed churches, seminaries and monasteries in much of the world, and their numbers may continue to grow unless the church embarks on a path of renewal. People who have reduced their religious life to attending Sunday Mass have found their doors closed. What is not God's call to creatively seek other ways of communicating with God in changing circumstances? In some Catholic families, during the lockdown, people began to read the Bible together and talk honestly about their faith for the first time in a long time, or for the first time ever. Some priests of my generation have learned to use social media to evangelize. However, it requires discernment of what is non-transferable in evangelization and liturgy. Many have come to understand that the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist includes the real presence of the faithful around Christ's table. Technology, Martin Heidegger wrote, has overcome all distances but has created no proximity. We must learn to use technology in pastoral ministry, but at the same time develop a culture of actual nearness. In the rite of entry of adults to the catechumenate, we bless their bodies, their eyes, ears, mouths, hearts, and shoulders. May God also open our eyes, ears, and hearts to understand his call. We must keep our ears open to God's word and our eyes open to the realities of our world. In the spirit of the old prayer, let us ask in these days for the courage to change what we can and should change, for patience to endure what we cannot change, and for wisdom to distinguish one from the other. Thank you.